Sustain 267.
Welcome to the Sustain 267 podcast, where we have conversations with Africans on climate change and sustainability in Africa. I am your host, Batukile Sidze. Before we get into the conversation this week that we as the Sustain 267 podcast team are quite proud of, this week we crossed the 1,000 plays mark and have been played in more than 45 countries globally, with 25 being African countries. Snap, snap, snap. Thank you so much for helping us reach those milestones by listening to the Sustain 267 podcast. If you haven't yet, please subscribe so you can get our latest episodes as soon as they're available. And if you've been listening, please drop us a rating wherever you listen to the Sustain 267 podcast. That would really mean a lot to our team. Getting into today's conversation, so last week was International Vulture Awareness Day. We thought it relevant to highlight and tell the story and highlight the roles of vultures in our communities. They're such an easy bird to overlook, and as such, the dangers that they are exposed to and their rapidly decreasing population as they face possible extinction in the wild in 10 years may go completely unnoticed. This week, we speak to Remo Tsereganye-Kutu-Sitse from BirdLife Botswana to speak to us on vultures, but specifically vultures in Botswana. First, I asked him to give us a little bit of background on BirdLife Botswana and the work that they do.
Okay. BirdLife Botswana is a non-profit-making, non-governmental organization formed in 1980. But by then, it was called Botswana Bird Lab. And in 2000, we transformed, we changed the name and how we work to become BirdLife Botswana. We then joined an international organization called BirdLife International, where it's a group of like-minded NGOs across the globe. For example, if you go to South Africa, there is BirdLife South Africa, BirdLife Zambia, BirdLife Zimbabwe, and so forth and so on. So we basically focus on conservation of bird life and their habitats. And we do a lot of advocacy to the government. We've organized how we work in what we call programs. For example, in Botswana, we have four main programs that guide how we work. Obviously, we don't have a program on seabirds because we don't have access to the sea. We have four programs that govern how we work as BirdLife Botswana. One, conserving species. And this is where we do a lot of research with respect to certain species that we are interested in. You'll recall that in Botswana, we have 600 different bird species. But not all of them are equally important. Others are more threatened than others, obviously. And what we do is we focus our research on those which are more threatened. The second program that governs our work is called Site and Habitat. And this is where we focus on areas which host, you know, those critical species. Or those threatened species. We have 12 such areas in Botswana, normally referred to as important bird and biodiversity areas. So we have 12 such areas in Botswana. What we do is we look at how these areas are being managed, who and how can we help in terms of improving the effective management of those areas so that they can continue supporting those species. So the third program that governs how we work is called ecological sustainability. And here we mainly engage corporates in terms of contributing to conservation of natural resources. We don't only focus on birds because we realize that, you know, birds don't just live in isolation. They also interact with other species as well. So we encourage the corporates, such as Botswana or Board Ash, to contribute anyhow they can to conservation of the natural resources in their area. The last program that governs how we work is empowering people. And this is where we work mainly with what is referred to as community-based organization as an entry point. And some people call those, you know, setup or structures as trust. So we try and link bird life with people livelihoods or livelihoods with bird life. So this is where you hear, you know, projects such as avitourism, you know, bird tourism. You know, we engage communities in terms of taking advantage of bird and bedding in their area to make an income. We also help those communities to generate and apply and approach or access and benefit from the local donors and international donors, which can support their cause. Most of the CBOs are, you know, resource-oriented, natural resource-oriented. That is, they are largely focused on conservation of natural resources in their area, as well as making a livelihood, you know, for their community.
Considering what you just said, you said that there are some birds that are more endangered than others. And I know you've done quite a lot of work around vultures. Could you share the state of vultures in Botswana and possibly the rest of the world currently?
Yes, thank you. The situation of vultures in Botswana, you know, even globally is dire, you know. Vultures are one of the species which are heavily threatened, mainly because of how they are and the human activities. Globally, there have been estimates of, you know, 90% reduction in population of vulture species. Studies have shown that we as Botswana are not exempt, you know, from that predicament, such that we've received reports where vultures have been decimated or have died in large numbers, largely due to poaching and or, you know, farmers poisoning the carcass, you know, as a bait to, you know, livestock predators. As an example, last year 2019, we received reports around Tuli Block, where about 60 vultures perished at one spot. As that wasn't enough, in July, we received reports that about 537 vultures died at one spot around Chobe as a result of, you know, poaching incidents in Chobe area.
The numbers are declining, but are they even important? What role do they play in the ecosystem? Should we be worried about the 90% decline?
Yes, we really should be worried. In fact, we should be more than worried, because it has shown that the numbers now are even getting extremely low, you know. If the situation continues as it is, we might have vultures extinct in the wild, what we call extinct in the wild, in the next 10 years. So it is the role of conservation NGOs and conservationists to ensure that, you know, people get the message of any species that is in danger of being extinct in the wild. As I said earlier, you know, we are one of those, you know, conservation NGOs or organizations which is making a lot of advocacy, providing data that can help the decision makers to, you know, have an intervention in terms of, you know, interventions that can reduce the population. So one of the roles, like you said, one of the roles that vultures do is to clean up the environment, which would otherwise cost a particular government some money to clear up that environment. So if we have vultures in a particular area. So they play that economic role. Apart from the economic role, they have an ecological role that they play, such that if you remove the vultures from the ecosystem, you kind of disturb the balance of the ecosystem.
Okay, so they're like you said, they're like a free cleaning resource, kind of like African children to their parents type thing.
Yes, definitely. In fact, you know, some research has shown that, you know, if there are some carcasses that are not left, that are left and not cleaned up, there's been records showing the possibility of spreading of diseases. So which would otherwise not, you know, happen should there be vultures to clean up, you know, those dead or those carcasses.
Okay. And then I know a lot of animals have been affected by climate change. Are they also being affected by climate change?
Yes, definitely. Again, you know, climate change is one of the concepts that affects most of the species, including vultures. It can be direct, it can be indirect. You'd be aware that climate change, we mainly feel the effects of climate change, whether it happened, you know, in our region or not. We feel the effects of climate change. We may have drought, for example, as the effect of climate change. We may have floods or excessive rain as the effect of climate change, which has a bearing on the food availability for that particular area. So these are some of the things that, you know, like I said, you know, they affect, you know, species, you know, directly or indirectly.
And then beyond climate change, what other challenges are they facing? You did speak earlier about finding 60 dead at one spot, 500 dead at one spot, 90% decline. What are the challenges that are leading to this?
Main challenge currently that have been recorded is wildlife poisoning, or poisoning from the use of agrochemicals, largely by farmers. And the other one is poisoning that is being used by poachers. Poachers deliberately, you know, lays vultures by poisoning carcass, such that, you know, vultures die in large numbers. Why they do that is because when they hunt, you know, say they shoot an animal, you know, vultures start to fly over that area, you know, and normally it alerts the wildlife rangers that, you know, something is going on somewhere. So they intentionally poison the carcass, you know, to kill the numbers in that area. So poisoning has been at the top of the list, you know, across the globe, you know, as one of the, I mean, as the main contributing factor to vulture decline. Yes, there are other, you know, contributing factors. The fact that, you know, vultures don't lay a lot of eggs, you know, as compared to other species, also contributes to the breeding success, you know, the low breeding success of, you know, the species. The fact that, you know, vultures are sensitive disturbances, you know, be it at nests or the physical disturbance to a particular species, you know, also contributes to, you know, the low breeding success. And definitely it influences the population.
But for the farmers that are the ones who are responsible for poisoning the vultures, what's the alternative to solving their problem? Because I can understand how it's a problem for them to poison the vultures, but the reality is there's a challenge that needs a solution. What would be an alternative for the farmers?
As far as regulation from the government is concerned, it doesn't stipulate how farmers can address a predator or an animal that is threatening the farmer's life or the farmer's property. It does, however, allow an intervention that a farmer can take to address a problem animal. So what we've been proposing and preaching to farmers is that other alternatives, many other alternatives that can be used as opposed to using the agrochemicals. So for example, it has come to our attention that most of the effects of human-wildlife conflict or predators, you know, preying on livestock has been due to the fact that the crops are weak and some people have used. So if you strengthen, obviously, your crop, you know, chances are that, you know, predators would not access your livestock, especially at night. Secondly, you can use wildlife guarding dogs. You know, some people have tried that, and it has worked, especially for small stock. And there is one thing that has been working for ages, and it will also work if we do it: herding. If we continue herding our livestock, there is no how we can have those predators preying on our livestock. So it's just that over time, people have not had, you know, headed their, you know, livestock, and that has led to, you know, free access to predators. Yeah, I mean, free access of predators to our livestock. So herding has been and is and still is and will continue being the best method of addressing, you know, human-wildlife conflict.
All right. I think what I like the most about the solutions that you're suggesting is that they're so practical. They're so practical and would be easy to put in place. You know, herding stronger crawls. All of those are very practical, and already things that can be done. But then now extending the conversation to the poachers, is there any way that we can address it?
One issue about poaching is difficult, because poaching is complex. In fact, let me put it that way. But Botswana has been trying so hard, you know, to address the issue of poaching. I think recently we've had, you know, incidences where there've been exchange of firearms, you know, between poachers, you know, and wildlife rangers. We've had incidences, especially in, if you know, the area around Lenyante, which is, you know, across on the border of Botswana and Namibia. That's where we got a lot of reports of vulture deaths. We had about, you know, 300 around in 2015. We had reports of about 100, you know, around Lesoma area, which is also on the border of Botswana. So addressing poaching has been one of the, you know, difficult thing for the government of Botswana. But, you know, you'll be aware that the Minister of Environment, Natural Resources and Tourism has joined forces with the Botswana Defence Force, you know, to, you know, establish or have camps around the borders of anti-poaching units in an attempt to address, you know, the poaching incidents. But still, we still experience or have, you know, those people who unfortunately get onto the country and poach, especially elephants and rhinos. So it's a complex, you know, scenario. But I think so far the country is doing the best it can do.
And then I think also taking the conversation from just what they're doing to address the poaching, considering the situation as you've put it so far, what are you at BirdLife doing to address the situation with vultures?
One of the biggest thing, or we provide evidence because our organization is research-based. So all the information that we gather and compile is informed by research, informed by statistics. So we gather a lot of information and we do what we call advocacy. We advocate for interventions, you know, what should be done, where, using the information that we've gathered. So we are doing a lot of advocacy to government with regards to how interventions should play, how policies should be crafted such that they capture a relevant, you know, information and they address relevant, you know, issues. So secondly, as an organization, we are coming up with other programs which we think can help, you know, spread the message. We've currently have formed or came up with a campaign, I Want My Botswana Vultures Alive, Not Dead. So it's a campaign that we started. We are doing largely, you know, public awareness for farmers, law enforcement, and everybody, children, around vulture conservation. So apart from the public awareness campaign, we are coming up with programs where we want to provide alternative feeding sites, such as vulture restaurants. So we are currently in the process of establishing the one of the first, you know, vulture restaurants that we would have or we would manage in Makgadikgadi. So secondly,
quick question before you continue. Is vulture meat edible? I don't think I've ever had it or heard someone saying they're eating it. And you're talking about vulture restaurants.
Actually, a vulture restaurant is like a butchery. I mean, you provide meat and bones for vultures to come and feed. Actually, it's you can say vulture feeding station. So yeah, so this is what you do.
Should have put it that way. But yes, thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome. So we'll provide such vulture feeding station to provide a safe feeding site for vultures. We want to pilot this in Makgadikgadi largely because, you know, we have a good number of vultures in that area. But if it works, you know, how we are expecting, we want to extend it to other areas as well. We also want to have what we term vulture safe zone. You know, vulture safe zone is an area or is a concept that we have, you know, came up with as BirdLife Partners, and we are starting on that concept within the Southern Africa region. You know, the Zambians, for example, the Zambian BirdLife Partners started. We also want to start here, and this is where you identify an area, a large area, and then whatever happens in that area, you ensure that you work with all stakeholders, the government, the private, the community, the farmers, and all those people in that area to ensure that everything that has been done, everything that has been planned for is pro or it's for conservation of vultures. So if it means we banning the use of agrochemicals in that area, we agree to ban those agrochemicals in that area. It's not a legal conservation area, but it's largely a conservation arrangement, you know, for vulture conservation.
Okay. And then for the benefit of people who are listening, what is an agrochemical?
Agrochemicals are chemicals normally used to address agricultural pests. Any chemicals that are used to address agricultural pests.
Okay, thank you for that. Sounds like you've got really great initiatives in the pipeline and the vulture restaurants where there'll be no vultures on the menu. But how can people support? What kind of support would you need for these initiatives?
The first kind of support, I think for now we've been having good support from government, I must say. And we've also been receiving, you know, very good support recently from like-minded conservation NGOs in Botswana. And these are, or these include, you know, Raptors Botswana, includes Cheetah Conservation Botswana, and, you know, Mokolodi Nature Reserve. They also been supporting, you know, our initiative on vulture conservation, because they also have an interest in conservation of natural resources. So, like I said, we've been receiving, you know, support from government. The government at this point in time has set up an officer who is called a vulture coordinator. So his main daily job is to look at, you know, issues around vulture conservation in Botswana, aid by government. So we also want, you know, the general public to continue spreading the message around, you know, the misuse of agrochemicals around the country, you know, such that we probably stop using those going forward. We are working on providing alternative chemicals that can be used if at all you have to use agrochemical. We are working with the Ministry of Agriculture to provide, you know, alternatives for that. We haven't, you know, completed the exercise, but we are currently sitting around the table seeing how we can best come up with the alternatives if at all you must use, you know, chemicals. So this is largely because if people have access to these chemicals, you know, it has come to our attention that, you know, people will misuse them. So at least if you provide them with, you know, chemicals which are environmentally friendly but also does the job, you know, if they misuse those, chances are that, you know, vultures would not be affected.
I think it's great that government and certain NGOs are supporting you. You did talk about another form of support would be not using agrochemicals, but filtering it right down to the individual Motswana, alternatively individual African, wherever they are on the continent or even off the continent. We've got some listeners in countries like India, and I remember coming across an article that spoke about the rapidly declining vulture numbers in India. What can individuals do?
We have called and we continue calling out for individuals to give us data. You know, we have realized that, you know, information that we receive or that is reported, it's not all the data that is, it's not everything that is happening out there that is being reported. So even if I tell you that, you know, we have, you know, 60 records, what is happening on the ground is actually more than what is being reported. So we're always saying people should report. You know, whenever you see a vulture's, you know, carcasses or poison somewhere, please report to the nearest police, the nearest wildlife office, or the nearest wildlife office. That's the first thing that everybody can do. Report all the incidences of vulture death. So secondly, we want people to report the culprits. We want to see a situation where somebody is taken to court or is charged appropriately, you know, for the misconduct. So that hasn't been happening. So we are calling for every individual to please consider these main two issues. One, report all the incidences that you see for vulture death. Secondly, report all the culprits who do wildlife poisoning.
And call the police. Thank you so much. I think that's it for today. Thank you so much for making time to speak to me. And I hope that when people hear this, they do take time to learn more about it and from then on report, because we'll know better on how important they are to our ecosystem. I think sometimes vultures are just those things that are so far at the back of your mind and you never see them anywhere.
Yeah. In fact, before I close, you know, I should have noted that in Botswana we have 7 different vulture species, two of which now it's very difficult to find them. We still keep the record. We still say we have them, but it's not easy to find those vultures. But we have 7 different species of vultures in the country. But the 5 that we have, the population is dwindling. It's rapidly decreasing, largely because of the actions of the humans.
Is there somewhere where we can find out more information on the vultures?
Right now, I've seen that a lot of emphasis, especially on for conservation NGOs, they're also talking about vultures. So if you go online, you would see a lot of information on vultures. But I can draw people's attention to the BirdLife International website and the BirdLife Botswana website. That is where you would have a lot of information about what is happening across the globe. So if you go to our website, you'll see what is happening with regards to bird conservation in Botswana, including vultures. So if you go to BirdLife International website, you'll see what is happening globally with regards to bird conservation and vulture conservation.
I shall be sharing the links to both BirdLife Botswana and BirdLife Africa in the description notes. Please look them up, see the work that they do, and see how you can further support. Thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of Sustain 267 Podcast. I'll be posting new episodes every week of conversations on climate change and sustainability in Botswana and the rest of Africa. So as you may know, this podcast is currently fully self-funded and fueled by my passion as a climate change enthusiast. I truly, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate the support you give by listening to the weekly episodes. However, if you'd like to take your support a step further and support the production of the podcast financially, please become a patron on our Patreon page. Tiers start from as little as 30 pula or $3 a month. I'll include the link in the show description. I am the host of Sustain 267 Podcast, Batukulisite, and the sound engineer is Maleho Makgoti. Like our Facebook page, Sustain 267, where we'll be sharing this episode and continuing the conversation. The COVID-19 pandemic is still on, and in Botswana, we are now facing an increase in cases and lives are being lost throughout the continent. Let's continue to follow regulations so we and our loved ones stay safe. Take care.